The Avatar Dining Club Mysteries by Huckleberry Hax. Episode 11. The Cathedral Photograph. As I trudged up the steps to La Barra Verde, I realised it was the first time in months that I'd entered the venue for the monthly meeting of the Avatar Dining Club, and it had still been light outside. There was a faint April warmth to the air, though not quite enough to dissuade me from switching just yet to my summer jacket. The roofs of some of the buildings around me were lit up in a pastel orange glow. But there was a distinct absence of spring in my stride as I entered the restaurant. I had come close to cancelling at the last minute, only failing to do so in the end because Mary Ann Middlemarch had beaten me to it with a much better reason than any I could muster. She had just broken up with her virtual world boyfriend, 26 Bournemouth, and couldn't face having to engage in cheerful metaverse conversation. Ordinarily, that would have left a gathering of six. Following our previous meeting, however, rainy September, a woman for whom I'd developed a hopeless crush over the last few months, had emailed to inform us all that she had deleted her metaverse account and would no longer be coming to our meetings. She had also just broken up with her virtual world boyfriend. So that meant there would only be five attending, and I just didn't have the heart to turn that into four. I should add that it was Rainey's absence that was the reason for my own particular reluctance to attend. It was a selfish indulgence, and I recognised it as such the moment I read Mary Ann's message to us, so bravely composed and completely free of negative language. Still, it was with a heavy heart that I entered the restaurant, knowing that the lively, carefree smile would be absent from our table. Right up until our December meeting, just 5 months earlier, her quickness to judge had made her the member I was least enthusiastic to see. Everything had inexplicably switched in the 3 seconds it took to complete a seasonal hug and a kiss on the cheek. Oh, how I wished I might somehow switch back to that prior perspective and be once again indifferent to her absence. Such mechanisms, however, are beyond the reach of mortal human beings to exploit. As I approached our table, Raw Concrete, the young metaverse builder and the inviter this evening of our virtual guest, was busying himself with the laptop that sat at the far end of the table. Edward, our white-haired host and founder of the club, was sitting in his usual seat at the opposing end and chatting with Indigo Williams, the purple-haired club owner and skin designer. Next to her, Jennifer Bitt looked up and smiled at me. "Hey, Leonard," she said. "Good evening, all," I replied, and flopped down into my regular seat facing her. "So then, this is it for tonight?" So it would appear. Edward and Indigo are discussing how we might open up our membership now that Rainey has left. I must confess, there was a little part of me that was hoping she might be here tonight after all. "A sentiment we all share, I'm sure," Edward told me. "Good evening, my dear fellow." "I think membership should be by invitation only," said Indigo. "Proposees get one guest attendance, and then we all have a vote on whether he or she gets accepted. Only a unanimous vote would pass." I shrugged. "Fine," I told her. "Did you have anyone in mind? They would have to live within an hour's drive of this place." "And we could always move to a different restaurant," she said, "if there's one that accommodates a new member better and doesn't add too much to our own journey times." "Oh, sure," I said, glancing briefly in the direction of our tireless waiter, Enrico, and hoping he hadn't heard her. "Let's just change that as well."
"Communities face change, Leonard," Edward told me, not unkindly.
It's a fact of life. Either they adapt to that change, or they wither away. I scowled. Too much adaptation means you end up with a different community than the one you started with. In which case, you might just as well have let it wither away. Ask anyone over the age of 60. You're unusually grumpy tonight, Indigo commented. Missing Rainy, perchance? I no longer cared that she had somehow tuned in to my secret crush, or so I told myself as I blushed fiercely. This is exactly what I hate about the metaverse, I told her. You make friends with people from around the entire planet. Distance is literally no obstacle. And then one day a relationship turns sour and they just up and leave. It's one thing when someone has to physically move away in real life. Then they have to leave you. But when someone leaves the virtual world, they do so by choice. Nothing is forcing them. That's when you find out how much you really mean to them. Physically moving away in real life is also a choice, dear chap, said Edward. And living inside the metaverse is also something that stops you from doing other things. Virtual worlds might eliminate physical distance as a variable, but that doesn't mean our choices stop becoming about how we choose to spend our time. It is our duty to ourselves to keep that issue under constant evaluation. Yeah, well, I said, it feels like a rejection to me. In any case, Jennifer told me, nothing has to change right away. This is just an initial conversation. I waved them ahead. Fine, converse away. But if the venue changes, then you can consider me out. But don't you see, Leonard? Indigo tried to explain. If membership was by unanimous vote only, then you'd be able to block someone from joining where a change of venue would be required. No one would be able to force that on you. Oh, sure, I replied. Everyone will be perfectly happy with me being the one guy who blocks the new member everyone else wants to join. I can see that being a barrel of laughs. Edward frowned unhappily. Indigo looked like she was going to scream for a moment. Then she sighed and reached out across the table and put her hands over mine. I miss her too, Leonard. Does that make it any better? I sighed. A little, I replied. If nothing else, take comfort in the season, Edward said. It's Easter in just a few days, a story to remind us all that no pain we can possibly bear is anything that hasn't been experienced 1,000 times before, and that loss is inevitably followed by renewal. Guys, said Roar, I've got a grade A guest for us today, and what's more, he's promised to bring us a puzzle to solve. Promised? Edward inquired. In fact, the moment he learned I was a member of the club, he practically begged me for a guest invitation. He's heard all about us. I see we're starting to gain a reputation, Jennifer commented. I kind of like that, Roar said. What if I were to create an in-world group for the club, so that it appeared on our profiles? The risk of repeating myself endlessly, Edward told him. It is a dining club, not a mystery-solving club. Besides, said Indigo, not listing it would make it appear more secretive. She winked at Roar quickly, and he grinned back at her. So, what does your guest do? Jennifer asked. He's a builder, just like me, Roar replied, only he specializes in virtual world recreations of buildings that exist in the real world. A slight frown appeared across Edward's forehead. Anything I've seen? Indigo asked Roar. Well, let me see now. He paused to type something into a chat window. He's done a great model of the Tower of London, and just last week he finished a reproduction of Winchester Cathedral that he's been working on for the last 2 years. He clicked the connect button. Well, you can ask him yourself. The screen cleared to show a middle-aged man with short dark hair and a bushy beard. "Everyone say hello to Brick and Mortar," said Edward, with an edge to his voice that I don't believe we had ever heard from him before. Said Roar. "You've met?" "Hello, everyone," Mortar said cheerily, waving at his camera. "Yes, Edward and I are old pals, aren't we, Edward?" "Past acquaintances," our host said, somewhat tightly. "Put it this way, I used to sit in the same position as you do now, Roar, just to Edward's right." "What?" I asked, closely followed by Roar, Indigo, and Jennifer. Mortar pretended to look confused. "Wait, you mean Edward? You never told them about the previous Avatar Dining Club?" There was a stunned silence. "OMG," Indigo mouthed silently. Edward said nothing. "There was a club before us," I asked, feeling like one of us had to at least voice the question. "Oh, wow," said Mortar, an obviously fake look of shock on his face. I mean, yes, absolutely, Mr. I don't know your name. Leonard, I said quickly. Leonard Lounge. The writer, right? Pleased to meet you. Love your work. Roar and Edward, of course, I know, so that leaves... Indigo Williams, said Indigo. Ah, yes, I have brought a skin of yours in the past for a girlfriend, worth every penny. Jennifer Bitt, said Jennifer. And I gather that same girlfriend was a devout follower of your fashion blog. Excellent work, Edward. You've clearly prioritised quality over quantity this time. We're down by 2 tonight, said Indigo. Our club consisted of 10 members at one point, Mortar said in a matter-of-fact tone. We met over a period of nearly 2 years. We used a lovely little Italian restaurant in Newbury. Their pesto sauce was quite magnificent. I don't suppose you're taking applications for new members by any chance? We're still writing the policy for that, said Indigo quickly. We'll get back to you. Bricken, said Roar, why didn't you mention any of this before? Well, I, of course, just assumed you all knew about the original club, Mortar replied. And as for my personal membership of it, well, you can't blame me for wanting to surprise an old friend. Indigo said, somewhat tentatively, Edward, I have to ask, why did the old group end? Our white-haired host looked at her gently. You will recall my words on our first meeting, my dear. If anyone should discuss real-life information, I will simply get up and leave, and it will be the last you ever see of me. You are all aware of the importance I attach to us remaining in metaverse character at these meetings. It is our one rule, and it is there to keep us safe. I insisted on that same rule in the previous club, and Mr. Mortar chose to ignore it. So you got up and left? Literally got up and left, said Mortar. He just stood up, said, goodbye, everybody, and walked out of the restaurant. I warned you not to call my bluff, Bricken. Mortar put his hands up in mock surrender. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I admit it. I broke the rule. It was stupid and arrogant of me, and I never got the chance to apologise properly. I'm very, very sorry, Edward. Do you want me to terminate the connection? Roar asked our host, his voice uncharacteristically hard. Our youngest member was clearly unamused at the deception he had been the victim of. But you haven't heard my puzzle yet, Mortar cried from the laptop. Edward said to Roar, You weren't to know any of this, dear fellow. There is no rule that says a previous member cannot attend as a guest. Provided Mr. Mortar can abide by our no-real-life rule this time, I see no reason why he should be ejected. I'll abide, said Mortar, nodding eagerly. Enrico chose that moment to approach us with his notepad and we all placed our orders, grateful for the distraction. Whilst we waited for the foods to come, Morta told us in tedious detail about the dish he had prepared for himself. He was sitting at home, but had prepared a full 3-course meal so that he would be perfectly synchronized with us as we ate. Each dish was described not only in terms of its ingredients and preparation, but also with the story of his discovery of it. The soup he was having for his starter was his great-grandmother's special recipe. The main course included a sauce he'd accepted the recipe for as part payment in a game of poker he once won against a Michelin-rated Italian chef. "I only wish you could taste it. It's absolutely exquisite." And so on. It started to feel as though we were the guests at his virtual dinner party, rather than the other way around. After a fashion, Indigo asked him, "So what happened after Edward left your dining club? Did you carry on meeting without him?" "That was my suggestion, Miss Williams," Morta replied, "and seeing it was how my fault that Edward had left us, it seemed only reasonable that I should take on hosting responsibilities rather than burdening someone else with that task." "I bet you just love that," Indigo murmured from behind her hand. "And we did indeed meet for a couple of months," Morta continued, "but then attendance started to wane. Edward had developed a reputation for solving people's virtual world mysteries, one which I gather continues with the current dining club. And much as I had analysed and faithfully reproduced his technique, I just didn't have his luck in those first 2 meetings following his departure." "Or in any of them prior to it," Edward commented. Indigo snorted so bad she nearly spat out her wine. Morta also laughed. "Come now, Edward, you old rogue. You think I didn't work out that Mandy Ellington's pet cat was actually her ex-boyfriend spying on her? I reached that conclusion at the exact same moment that you did, only I had a mouthful of potagara to finish before I could speak." "So you told us, many times over." "In any case, there are some puzzles which simply cannot be solved, going on only the information available." Morta smiled knowingly. "Maybe you'll encounter one yourself tonight." Which brought us to his problem. As Enrico placed our food in front of us, Morta outlined it for us thus. "You might have heard I recently completed a virtual world recreation of Winchester Cathedral. It is, even if I say so myself, a masterpiece. It took me 2 years to complete, and a very significant percentage of that time was spent visiting the cathedral in real life to study it in exceptionally fine detail. The great altar screen alone, perhaps one of the biggest and most intricate pieces of stonework to be found anywhere in the world, took me over 6 months to complete. At least 3/4 of all the textures I've used were sampled directly from the cathedral, including the stone floors, walls and buttresses, the various woods, and every single stained glass window. You will not find a build like this anywhere else in the metaverse. A copy of it has been purchased and placed in-world by the Church of England, and its first virtual service will be held on Sunday, so that Christians all over the world can celebrate Easter together." "Impressive," Indigo said dutifully. We all did our bit and nodded. "And so to the problem, friends," Morta sighed theatrically. "The build is in fact a little too good." Right, said Indigo. "The old, my only fault is my perfectionism thing. I used that in an interview once." "Did it get you the job?" I asked her. "It was for a post in..." she began, and then caught the look that Edwards was giving her. "Nope," she said quickly. I present to you Exhibit A," Morta announced. "Roar, I trust you prepared the printouts I sent you over the weekend?" "Yes, I did," Roar replied, reaching into the backpack he always slung over the back of his chair. He pulled out some A4 colour prints and handed one to each member. He also pushed a large tablet into the centre of the table. "The tablet has an electronic version of the photograph you each have a hard copy of," Morta told us, so that you may zoom in on any small detail you are curious about. I'll give you all a moment to inspect the picture. It was a picture of the interior of Winchester Cathedral, taken from the main entrance and looking across the seating towards the altar and the great screen. Aside from a couple of visitors sitting together in quiet reflection with their backs to the camera, the cathedral was empty of people. Looking at the picture, I got a sense of vast, open space and peacefulness. "Okay," said Indigo, "inspected." "What you are looking at there," said Morta, "is an image created inside my building. That is not the real cathedral." There was a murmur of appreciative noises from around the table. Jennifer said, "I have to give you credit, Bricken. That is an astonishing piece of work. I never thought for a moment that it wasn't a picture of the real thing." "It is amazing," Indigo agreed, now peering again at her copy of the photo. I pulled over the tablet and looked again myself. Knowing now that it was a model made me appreciate it at a whole other level. The detail was quite superb. The great screen, as Morta had himself indicated it would be, was a stunning piece of work, with all the angels and saints and Christ himself depicted in detail that, even when zoomed in on all the way, I would have sworn was real. But that was only where it started. Aside from this, there were literally hundreds of small things to be picked out around the image. Every last detail, from the candles to the hymn board, to the pulpit, to the loudspeakers, to the hymn books in the backs of the seats, was present. "Remarkable," I said. "Thank you, thank you," Morta said to all of us, smiling and nodding. "When you think what the metaverse used to look like in the early days," said Jennifer, "all flat blocks and edges and corners, would you ever have believed back then that it could possibly look as beautiful as this?" "So how does this picture represent a problem?" Indigo asked Morta. "It's a problem," he replied, "because I found it on a blog post about the cathedral. The owner of the blog found the picture somewhere online and believed it to be a picture of the cathedral." "I'm still not seeing the problem." "Well, when I wrote to the blogger and told her that what she'd posted was a picture of a virtual world model, she basically didn't believe me. My problem, then, is this. How do I convince her that this picture is a fake?" Indigo held her copy up to the light, squinting at it. "Are you absolutely certain that it is a fake?" "Oh, that's my model, all right," said Morta. "There's no doubt about that." "How do you know?" "Nothing I can easily put into words, I'm afraid. I just know. I've spent so much time working in that virtual space. I have an intimate connection to it and everything in it. There are tiny details I can point to. The third row of seating, for example, is marginally closer to the row in front than it should be. And if you look really closely at the first column on the right side, there's a spot where the textures don't quite line up correctly." "Then just point that out." "But those details prove nothing. The row of chairs could actually be slightly too close in real life. The detail that I see is a misalignment of textures might, to someone else, just be a smudge on the stonework." I scrutinized the digital picture, zooming in as far as I was able to on a detail. "When you get really close," I said, "there's a grain to the picture. If this is an image created in-world, then this grain must have been added after it was taken. That means that somewhere there must be an original without the grain. Can't you get hold of that original and send it to her as your proof?" "If I had the original, then I absolutely could and would do that," said Morta. "Unfortunately, I have no idea who created this picture, and therefore no way of obtaining the original image." "Oh, it's not one of yours?" asked Indigo. "No." "Then recreate the photo," said Rohr. "Take a new picture from the same angle with the same lighting and send it to her. That would be as good as sending her the original." "You make it sound like that's an easy thing to do," Morta protested. "It's an impossible thing to do. I could take 100 pictures a night for a year and still not find the exact combination of conditions. Position, angle, zoom, lighting scheme, sun angle, time of day. Sending a non-processed image to her would only work if it was clear that the two images were exactly the same. Where did the blogger say she got hold of the picture? Jennifer asked. She said she got it from Google Images. Have you repeated her search to find it yourself? If you can find the original web source for the picture, there might be some clue there as to who took it. If you can find out who took it and contact them, they might be willing to send you the original. I've tried every combination of words I can think of in search and cannot find the image online myself, Walter replied. So I went back to the blogger and asked her for more details about her own search. She was very vague and unenthusiastic in her information. I think she suspects me to be preparing some sort of legal case against her. Are you? I asked him. If it were my image, then perhaps there would be some sort of legal case to make, though I can't imagine it would be a particularly strong one. As it isn't, however, I can't see how any sort of legal threat exists from me. Nonetheless, she's removed the image from her post anyway. Well then, said Indigo, surely that solved your problem then? Not at all. I didn't want her to remove it. I simply wanted to convince her it was a fake. So, what exactly is your motivation in all of this? I asked. Publicity, he replied. The credits beneath the picture identifying as a build by me would be awesome advertising. That's all I'm after. And I realised I almost certainly won't get that now from this particular blogger, but it got me thinking more generally about how I might prove that images taken of my builds are actually of my builds. Upload the picture to a reverse photo search engine, suggested Raw. That should find you the image on the web, and then you might find out who took it. Actually, I've already tried that too. The search came back with nothing. I don't know if that means the image has been removed altogether from the web, or just that the search technology is no good for this sort of picture. So you can't find the image using any search strategy, even reverse search, and the blogger has removed it from her post. Indigo frowned. Are you sure she's telling you the truth about where she encountered it? My, my, said Morta. This is quite the panel of detectives you've assembled here, Edward. Our host smiled thinly. As I often tell them, their systematic inquiry is quite invaluable. To answer your question, I have no idea if she's telling me the truth, though I have no reason to suppose that she would lie. In any case, what of it if she is lying? My problem remains not how she found the image, but how to prove that it is not of the real cathedral. You said your overall intention concerns not this particular image, but more generally how to prove that point on any image taken of your work, I said. Isn't the solution, then, to plant some sort of detail within your builds that does this job for you by identifying them as yours? It won't solve this particular instance of the issue, but it should give you all the proof you need in the future. Like a novelist's name in the header of each page of his book, Leonard, Walter replied sarcastically. I do already have a few places in the build where a discreet plaque has been placed identifying me as the creator. What more can I do than that? Should I place decorative flags and posters everywhere to be certain that any picture taken includes at least one of them? I can just imagine the queues that that will create for my product. In any case, said Jennifer, I would just use a derender feature to get rid of any stuff like that in my photo. Walter waved his hand as though to say, exactly. Indigo said, frowning, so you started by saying you want to prove that this picture is a fake to this woman, but now you switch to saying that's a lost cause and want a more general way to prove that any such picture is a fake, but you don't want any solution suggested to include something you actually do differently in the future. I'm not clear here what the problem is we're meant to be solving. Yes, well, said Morta, sometimes problems don't come all neatly wrapped up. But we haven't heard yet from the maestro himself. Any thoughts, Edward? Have I presented a puzzle which even you cannot find a nice, neat solution to? Our host chewed thoughtfully for a moment, studying Mortar's face. "Should I take this silence to mean you have nothing to add?" Mortar asked, smugly. "Well," said Edward slowly, "there is one detail." "I knew you'd find something," said Indigo, grinning. Mortar's self-satisfied smile vanished, and his mouth settled into a cruel line. "I don't think so, Edward. You and I both know there is nothing in this picture that suggests it is a fake. Nothing." "I hesitate to say it, dear fellow. You appear to have put in such a lot of work on your research. I wouldn't want to criticize something quite so magnificent." Our guest went slightly red. He forced a smile. "Why, Edward," he said, "surely you know me well enough to know I welcome all forms of constructive feedback. I'm only interested in being the best that I can possibly be. Do let me know about this error I've apparently made." "It's really a very tiny one. Actually, I only spotted it because I was marvelling at the level of your detail. I was thinking to myself that it's one thing to model so precisely all those intricate carvings, but it's taking things to a whole other level when you even get the numbers on the hymn board right." A look of confusion came across Mortar's face. "The hymn numbers? What do they have to do with anything?" Edward smiled. "People of my age had those numbers drilled into us at school and church on a near daily basis. There is a very long-standing hymnal, that's a hymn book to you and me, called Hymns Ancient and Modern. A cathedral like Winchester would be certain to use it. In fact, I can see that it does, because the hymn books you've depicted have its unmistakable red cover. And what should I see on the hymn board but 248, otherwise known as Alleluia, Jesus is Risen, an Easter hymn, exactly right for the time of year. However, I then noticed that the next hymn number displayed is 67. Now, as anyone of my generation would surely know, this number is for Hark the Herald Angels Sing, a Christmas hymn. And then the final number on the list is 194, We Plough the Fields and Scatter, a hymn sung chiefly at harvest time. There is the giveaway detail you're looking for. I cannot imagine a circumstance where all three of these hymns would be sung on the same occasion. Therefore, the photo must be fake." Mortar seems to be struggling to control his composure. "You must be mistaken, Edward," he said. "There is nothing wrong with those numbers. There can't be." Our white-haired host shrugged. "I can only apply the knowledge I have, Bricken. Ask anyone of my age and upbringing, and they'll tell you the same thing that I've just said. Those numbers are nonsensical. But there is a definite plus to this discovery. Leave the numbers as they are, and you will have a built-in clue for future photographs. Exactly as Leonard suggested." Mortar issued a string of angry expletives. "Very clever, Edward. Very clever." Indigo had to cover her face in her napkin to conceal her laughter. "The great Edward has to win, whatever the cost. If you don't mind, I think I'll enjoy the rest of my meal alone." "Goodbye, Bricken," Edward said calmly, and just before the screen went blank. It took us all a good 5 minutes to recover from our laughter. Indigo in particular had tears rolling down her face at one stage and was unable to speak without howling hysterically all over again. "Edward," I said eventually, "I wasn't sure that I wanted to come today. Thank you. I wouldn't have missed this for all the world. What an absolute ass." Indigo said, breathlessly, "How the hell were you able to remember those hymn numbers?" Edward smiled and said, "I have known Mr. Mortar for a long time. It will come as no surprise to you to learn that it was his tendency during our meetings to attempt to, shall we say, outdo me. He saw himself as the natural leader of the group, and whilst I was always at pains to point out that there was no hierarchy to our club, he constantly competed with me nonetheless. Of course, that was his objective tonight also. He wanted to beat me by providing a puzzle that I was unable to solve by remaining within the rules of the group. I therefore had to find a creative solution. Within the rules of the group, I repeated. What do you mean? We only have one rule, no real-life information. Edward nodded. I'm going to share with you all now a piece of my own real-life information. I don't actually see this as a breach of our rule because it doesn't actually tell you anything about me that makes me identifiable in any way. Nonetheless, if I had told you this whilst the connection with Morta was live, he would undoubtedly have leapt upon it as an act of hypocrisy on my part and accused me of revealing real-life information where it suited me, whilst banning others from doing so. He wanted revenge for my leaving the group, and as he saw it, he couldn't lose. Either I broke my precious rule, or I admitted I could not solve the problem. You don't have to tell us anything you don't want to, said Indigo. Edward smiled and held up the picture. I suppose this is one of the photographs he took whilst he was researching his build, he said absently. You see, my friends, this is not at all a picture of his model. This is a picture of the real Winchester Cathedral. How can you possibly know that? Indigo asked. He pointed at a detail. Because that couple sitting a few rows from the back there is me and my late husband, and I remember that moment very clearly indeed. He died just a few days later. Oh, Edward, she said, and put her hand over his. Oh, you mustn't feel sorry for me, he told her. Life is all about change. He tried to set you up, I said. He knew you'd recognize the photo as real, but you would only be able to tell us this by breaking, as he saw it, your no real life information rule. I imagine he recognized me either before or after he took that picture, Edward said, nodding. I'm confused, said Rohr. If that's a real photo of the cathedral, then how can the hymn numbers be wrong? My dear boy, Edward said to him, my recollection of holding hymns ancient and modern in my young hands and singing every day from its contents might be as clear to me as though it were yesterday, but I have far better things to store in my memory than the numbers of those hymns. You mean you lied? And he must surely know it. But the only way he could reveal that knowledge would be to have admitted he had set me up with a fake photo. Indigo laughed out loud again. Edward, there was me thinking you the bastion of truth and decency. Truth is a relative thing, said Edward. What is true is that deception was used by Bricken at this table tonight. I just used it right back at him. The Avatar Dining Club Mysteries was written and read by Huckleberry Hacks. Music was by David H. Dean. For more of Huck's work, visit huckleberryhacks.wordpress.com.